Willie and D Mace on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Bingen in for Derek Mason today. Willie Donick live from his aunt and uncle's farm in Ohio.
White Farm.
As he prepares, get that shout out in there, as he prepares to move his son into college. But on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, our friend Tim Hasselbeck here for his weekly chat. And Tim, Willie and I were just discussing the difference between Brian Callahan and Mike Vrabel in terms of how they approach the preseason. Brian Callahan stresses the importance of playing his starters significant amount of time in preseason games. The expectation is that the starters on offense will play three-ish series, he said, against the Saints over the weekend. Mike Vrabel was staunchly against playing his players in the preseason or doing so very rarely. In your experience, what do you feel like is the better approach to a preseason in terms of playing starting players?
Yeah. So first, let me say this. I recently did a college drop-off. So Willie, like, it's okay. Grab the Kleenexes. Like, it's all right. Like, it's natural. Like, I just had to go to Vanderbilt. Like, I think it's like a 10-minute drive. It still hurts. Like, it still hurts. I don't care if it's close, if it's far. So I have felt your pain this week.
Tim, I drove back from Boston for our oldest from Northeastern University. Drove back, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't control myself. It was crazy. Luckily, I was by myself, and the rest of my family was flying back. Yeah. I was driving solo, but it's unbelievable how it just takes over your emotions.
Yeah, hey, it's healthy and it's good, but yeah, we miss them at home. That is for sure. Adam, to answer your question, like in terms of the preseason, look, I think that it's one of those scenarios that there really isn't a right or a wrong because we've seen it work both ways. Like Sean McVay, you know, one year is like, no, I'm not doing it. Matthew Stafford, you'll never see him, you know, out there in a preseason game. They win a Super Bowl, and he was, you know, relatively new to the team. You know, conversely, you know, Andy Reid, who, you know, I'm typically, you know, on here gushing about because I think he's the best. You know, Andy is not afraid to play Patrick Mahomes. And you think, really, like, is the risk actually worth it that you would play Patrick Mahomes in a preseason? Like, God forbid something happened to him, you know, like your season is over. But they do it and they have success with it. So I really don't think it's one of those scenarios where there is a right or there's a wrong. I think the bigger element is how you message it to your team, how your team accepts what your plan is. Because you know, some teams take the approach of, hey, our guys aren't playing, and those guys get themselves ready for week one. Other teams say, hey, you know, I don't care that you're making $30 million this year. We're going to risk you in a meaningless preseason game. And we've seen teams that do that buy into it.
Tim, as the Titans prepare to play the Saints in their preseason finale on Sunday afternoon, let's stick with the offense since we know they'll play at least three series, according to Brian Callahan. Which player or players that are considered starters on the Tennessee Titans as of now do you feel like have the most riding on their performance in that preseason game?
I think you'd, like in terms of riding, you know, in terms of like making the roster or starting to define a role.
We can say is a player or players who may be having some pressure coming up from behind them, from players who might be looking to push them for starting time. We can go with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general, at least on the offensive side of the ball, I think you need to just, and I think this is the case, this is probably a blanket statement throughout the league, but like, you know, receiver and offensive line seem to be just traditionally the areas where there are roster spots that are being won in these preseason games. And I say that, in, you know, and bit of a cop-out from like, you know, individually, but like when you look at a team and their decision, how many are we keeping? Are we keeping nine? Are we risking it with eight and a couple practice squad eligible guys? Are we keeping 10 offensive linemen? What are we doing? Hey, at receiver, you know, are we keeping five or are we keeping six? Or potentially if you have return value, you know, are we keeping more than that? And so I think that's really, I think that that's going on around the league. And I think you can kind of, you can say similar things about tight end and running back, again, because of special teams value. But I think that's really where it shows up. And then I would also say this, what's the quarterback situation going to be? So many teams, you know, even with the new changes in terms of, you know, how you can roster quarterbacks, like teams like the benefit of just carrying two. And do you feel like you can do that? And I think those are the things that matter. And I think those are the areas where pressure really starts to form in these preseason games as guys are starting to do the number count and trying to figure out where they fit in.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. So Tim, just do you have any observations? I know Levis didn't play on Saturday, so it might be a better question for you next week. But there seems to be a sense around the league that Brian Callahan is very good at working offenses, working with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I do sense that there's a fairly decent relationship building between Levis and Callahan here. But if do you have a sense of whether you think Levis is progressing here in from what you can see from where you sit?
Yeah, I do think he's progressing. I think part of the reason when you talk about the relationship is that, you know, Brian Callahan, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who are like, look, I think he's one of the smartest coaches, if not the smartest coach I've ever been around. And like I'm hearing that from people who have been around really good coaches. But I think maybe the thing that strikes me the most about him and his kind of leadership style is that there's a lot of humility in his approach and how he kind of communicates with players. And so I think that's a real good formula for developing trust as well as, you know, developing a quarterback. Now, I went to I went to a joint practice against the Seahawks, and I definitely saw a confidence in Levis that was impressive. And I didn't think he had like a particularly amazing day, but I thought that there were moments where, you know, it didn't go well, but like his posture, how he handled it, and then, you know, the ensuing plays, I thought those were good signs, you know, from what I saw in those environments, because I thought it was pretty competitive. I thought it was pretty chippy at times. And I think there were times where when it didn't go well, you could have just wondered what the response and fight back was. And I thought it looked good. I thought it looked really good by, you know, not just Levis, but I think by some of the receivers, some of the offensive linemen, just in terms of how they responded.
The relationship between the head coach and the quarterback, you know, you think about through the years, you can think about a number of them. You can think about clips of the quarterback. I remember one way back of Phil Simms and Bill Parcells screaming at each other on the sideline, but it was with respect. They loved each other. They loved playing with one another, Belichick and Brady, all of that stuff. You think a lot. How many times do we talk about Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes? And so here's a case in point that we're going to talk about later in the show, Tim. Tua Tagovailoa certainly feels differently about his relationship with his current coach as opposed to his last coach. So I think of that in the context of what we're talking about between Levis and Callahan, because that relationship is going to be very important.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And you know, I was on Get Up this morning and we were talking about that exactly. And Brian Flores was my younger brother's college roommate. Like I was teammates with Brian Flores. Like he is a kind of tough, no nonsense guy. And so I think sometimes you can just try to, you know, chalk he's just hard nosed. You know, like you said, the Parcells, Phil Simms interaction. I think the one thing that, you know, existed in the Parcells-Simms interaction or relationship that obviously did not in the Tua-Brian Flores relationship was, I don't think Brian Flores ever felt that there are two ever felt that Brian Flores actually really believed in him. Whereas, like, right. Parcells, and I saw it as a ball boy, like, I saw him just tear into people, but then I saw him, like, walk into the locker room after practice, put his arm around somebody and build him up and basically say, like, look, you're my guy. Like, this is how much I believe in you. And I just, as a teenager, I just remember seeing it and being like, well, that's interesting. He's pushing him because he knows that he can get more out of him. I think that's the difference. Like, I think that, you know, what's going on in Miami now is Tua feels like he's believed in. And I think that's unlocking something in Tua. That's where I think this could get really interesting in terms of the development of Will Levis. You have a quarterback, yes. or you have a head coach that's developed quarterbacks, does a good job coaching them. And if he can get more out of it and make Levis feel like he believes in him, well, we all know that there's all kinds of talent that Will Levis has. I think that's the challenge. That's the balance. And look, I think because of the experience, I think there's a pretty good shot that Brian Callahan can do it.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on Willie and D-Mace. Tim, before you go, as you said, you were on Get Up this morning, as I'm scrolling ESPN.com, I see your face on the video. I've got the still shot. Why Tim Hasselbeck disagrees with Tom Brady's take on rookie quarterbacks. And for those that did not hear Tom Brady's take, correct me if I'm wrong here, he was on the Stephen A. Smith podcast, and he said that it was a quote-unquote tragedy that the NFL teams, I should say, are forcing these rookies to play early. But the reality, quote from Tom Brady, but the reality is the only reason why they are is that we've dumbed the game down, which has allowed them to play. So tell us why you disagree with Tom Brady's take as it relates to rookie quarterbacks.
I mean, because we've seen rookie quarterbacks have incredible success, right? Like, and that's not a new phenomenon. Like, remember, like, Dan Marino did all right his rookie season. Like, we, you know, Russell Wilson was incredible. He's not a high draft pick in his rookie season. Like, it is not unusual for a rookie quarterback to play extremely well. Now, obviously, not everybody does, but it happens. And then I think the other aspect of it is this. Like, Tom Brady, obviously, an incredible career. And in terms of playing the game, probably higher than anybody, at a level higher than anybody's ever played it before. But when he took over as the starter, it was not the same level of quarterback play or nuance in the offense like it was, you know, in year 18 of him being a starting quarterback in the NFL. Like, I don't know. I think in some ways we're misremembering history. When he took over, they had an incredible defense. They were amazing at running the football with guys like Antoine Smith and Corey Dillon, Kevin Falk, guys like that, that, you know, they, it wasn't like it was, you know, some PhD level of offense that was going on early in Tom Brady's career. So I think one of the challenges of being an analyst when you are a great player is everyone thinks everything that you say is going to be right because you were right most of the time as a player. But I actually believe he's kind of off target on this one.
We'll see how he is absorbed as an analyst throughout the season. It is going to be very interesting because let's not forget, and Tim, you'll remember this very well, Joe Montana didn't do very well in the studio role. I'll never forget. He was in the NBC studio. It was just so awkward from the start, and he got out of it quick. He realized himself. It just wasn't for him. I don't think Brady's going to be like that. But you become under the microscope in a different way than you were when you're under center.
There's no question about it. And guys that were star players get thrown into it right away.
Right.
And listen, there is an art to it. Like, look at Jason Witten. Jason Witten knows a lot of football, smart guy, all the different stuff. But there are a lot of people hanging on every single word, you know. Hey, Willie, they don't have the benefit of a guy like me making mistakes, you know, calling NFL Europe games for NFL films only.
Yeah.
Shout out so, NFL Europe. It's been a minute since I've heard about that.
We can have a whole show on NFL Europe, thanks to Tim. He's got some great stories from that. But Tim, let's live in the now. Are the Tigers ready for the opener coming up?
Well, I hope we're ready by Friday night. I think we are. Great group of kids. They've worked really hard. I'm Listen, I'm fired up that game week.
Got butterflies
here.
A little bit?
Say it again. Butterflies? Yeah, I probably will on Friday night. You know, mainly just because I, you know, I just want the kids to be able to go out there and do their best. But it's been exciting. You know, it's been a blast, you know, coaching with my brother, coaching with my father. I love the coaching staff that we have here. You know, Ben Jones is, you know, back helping us out again. And it's just been awesome. It's just been awesome to see these guys work with the kids. And I think the kids are excited to kind of show what they've learned.
Tim Hasselbeck, good luck to Ensworth, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us, as he always does every week, on Willie and D-Mace. Great stuff from Tim. It was funny, as you were talking to him about Will Levis, I was scrolling ESPN.com, and his face just popped up on my screen from his a clip from his hit on Get Up, which I thought was... It was appropriate. Nice. Perfect timing. I do want to get to something interesting in the NHL that popped up on Twitter while we were during the break as it relates to a former member of the Nashville Predators. And I'll get Willie's thoughts on this as well. The Philadelphia Flyers, within the past 30 minutes, have tweeted that they have placed Ryan Johansson on unconditional waivers today for the purpose of terminating his contract due to a material breach. So according to the Flyers, they would know, they're the team, they have placed Ryan Johansson on waivers for the purpose of terminating his contract. Elliot Freeman has mentioned a couple of notes about it. He said that Johansson is expected to grieve this termination. The Flyers aren't commenting, but have made it clear they will present their case if asked to do so. The contract may be terminated tomorrow. There's going to be a bit of a process here. He also adds, according to several sources, at issue is the injury that prevented Johansson from playing games for Philadelphia after being traded from Colorado. So according to the Flyers, they have placed Ryan Johansson on waivers for the purpose of terminating his contract. An unceremonious end, potentially, to Ryan Johansson's NHL career, Willie?
We shall discuss.
We will get to that. We will get to that on the other side. Adam Vingan in for Derek Mason. Willie Donick, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.